Usually I say when I start a lecture that I have been thinking about or something like that, and then I start speaking. But I haven't been thinking about anything, so today is completely different. What I could speak about has been forced upon me. So I would call this lecture At the Whims of. Now, I hope I remember that when I label the lecture. Because I'm at the whim of my memory. So today I'm wearing yellow. Because today, everything is about the sun. I subscribed to something that is called NOAA. It is the space weather. It tells me all about what's happening in space as far as NASA and other organizations are concerned. And I've been aware of the fact that there has been an incredible amount of solar flares, solar activity on the sun within the very few last days. And that energy from the solar flares, which are happening very powerfully and all at the same time, is coming to Earth most powerfully today, yesterday and today. And I'm getting multiple warnings of G4. High alert. You know, David Beckham just posted a whole bunch of photos about how the wonderful Aurora Borealis is being seen in England and other places, and everybody's going, oh, how nice. And I'm thinking, whoa, people don't know what's going on. The first time I ever heard about these things was, I think it was Rukmini, was telling me long ago that in Armenia, they even publish in the newspaper when there's heavy geomagnetic storms, so people stay out of the, they stay inside or they stay protected as during that time. And I always wondered, like, what is this stuff? Because I never thought about it before. And since then, I've been following the weather, and what I have experienced caused all of the outages yesterday. Now, our personal electronic stuff is not affected as much as the large electrical installations which are servicing other places. They are the most affected by these. So, for example, our electrical company had no idea what was going on because their entire support system broke down. Their entire system by which they can assist others or fix anything broke down. My internet company entirely broke down. And then I started thinking, my God, we are living at the whim of the sun. The sun is causing everything to become very hot. Of course, it's our fault that it's doing so, but just so, it's still the sun that's heating things up. And these incredible solar eruptions are causing so much trouble to us. When I go out, I feel it. I feel that this intensity of what is happening is so great. I just want to get back inside as quickly as I can. You know, they have been talking about the fact that Venus used to be totally covered with water. Mars used to be filled with water. And then suddenly, that kind of like just dissipated. And wherever there is a lot of water, there's a lot of life. Why this happened is not important, but what is important is that we are living at the whim of these universal forces and we don't even think about it. We are absorbed in our phones, we are absorbed in the social networks, we're absorbed in the news, all these little things, interpersonal relations, all of this little chatter here and there. It's so insignificant. In fact, I'm just spending time these last days just observing what people are doing. what they are saying, what they are concerned about. And I'm seeing that most of it is not very meaningful. And a majority of it is an expression of some kind of anger or some kind of revenge or some kind of greed or some kind of lust. I tried to watch some show the other day, and within 5 minutes, I had to just turn it off. It was just filled with horrible things I didn't want to have anything to do with. So I started considering, there are so many cosmic things to worry about, so many super important things to worry about, that I cannot be pushed into worrying about insignificant or being entangled in horrible things. From the point of view of mystical energy, we choose, we desire, and we interact with what we want to. Now, just like the sun is very powerful right now. It's causing all kinds of effects on the planet. I'm choosing to avoid it. The things people are talking about, the news, the media, is so negative and horrible in various ways. I'm choosing to just avoid it. I'm choosing to express myself in any way required to be of service for people who need it the most. I'm making choices. I'm going, I will give this much, I will not give more than that. I will do like this, and I will not do like that. I will act according to my desire. I will accept according to my capacity and will. But then you may say, and rightfully so, what do you do when the exterior world is far superior or stronger than you? So the question is, do you just let it roll over you, or do you do something about it? I think this is an essential part of spiritual development. Some people say, it's really popular over there in Russia, that we don't do anything. It's all material energy. It's all just a machine. Everything's just happening to us, and we're just going with it. So that creates a wonderful attitude of passivity. Sometimes even one just resigns oneself to thinking, doesn't matter what I do, it's all just happening. I do not feel like that at all. I am 100% against this complete misrepresentation of Vedic ideals. I have to act according to my heart. I have to act according to who I am. I have to act according to that feeling I have within, that way in which my spiritual energy is manifesting to this world. I wish it to flow in a very particular way. I am choosing my responses. I am taking responsibility for my choices and dealing with the consequences. The entire idea of karma, of action and reaction, would be meaningless if there was no personal responsibility on my part for the choices I make. So everything I do, as Krishna, all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer or give away, anything you do, if you choose to do it within a spirit of devotion, it transforms your life. So in the beginning of this lecture, I was talking about being at the whims of the cosmos. Yet we have some choices we can make to not be at their whim, but to decide our fate. I mean, after all, I can stay inside for a couple of days. I can choose to do something beneficial for the planet. Does that mean I will succeed? I have a right to my action. I don't have a right to the result. And if I get the wrong result, or the result I didn't think I wanted, what do I do then? So I adjust. I love the discussions people have about those who do something wrong. First of all, what is right, what is wrong, whole nother discussion. But how a person who does something wrong, what is their situation? So one makes an endeavor and ends up with a result. What now? So we look around, we say, well, that didn't work. I have to make an adjustment. After all, the definition of insanity is to do the same thing over and over again and expect a different result. So that means each of us must be given the facility, must be given the possibility to make another choice once we have done something which is quote unquote bad. So if you do things and you have a wrong result, and then that's it, you're stuck. You can't go beyond that. So that's why in religions everywhere, there are these enormous discussions about redemption, about mercy, about transformation. But what's interesting about these is that there's a limit, unspoken limit, to how many times you can do something wrong that requires some kind of merciful transformation. Depending on your religion and its rules, how many times you get to fix it could be 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out. Who knows? Let's talk about the scientific method for a second. How much of science and technology and engineering and everything depends on trial and error? You try it, you fail, you try again in another way, you fail, you make an adjustment, you fail. Some people fail their entire lives, but they might never give up trying. And they may not even understand that later on, some other scientists can look at their research and say, well, this person tried all these things and it didn't work, so I'll just skip all that and try something new. We see that all over the world, historically, culturally, how society has been based on the endeavors of the previous, how we stand on the shoulders of those who have come before us. So the point is that we are going to screw things up. Now the real question is, what are you going to do about it? Are you going to do something about it, or are you just going to say, oh, well, it's hopeless, I give up, I can't do anything? There's no meaning to it. This is where existential crises appear. So I would say the key to spiritual discipline is when you don't give up. You keep trying. Because that is the spiritual nature, to continually make choices, to continually act, to continually move forward, to not succumb to the whims of others, to not live at the whims of the cosmos or to live at the whims of the society. To not be defeated by that which we cannot control, but to accommodate it in such a way that we can continue to make choices according to who we are. So when we understand that, we can then look at how others are making their choices in a different way. We can see this person is trying and failing. Are they going to learn or not? That is the question. And at what point am I allowed to condemn them? Am I allowed to condemn them? Do we have the right to condemn those who try and fail? This is not a rhetorical question. This is a real question. Because we often go through life with perceptions and we are judging continuously. This is good, this is bad, this is right, this is wrong. This is allowable, this is not allowable, this is the way it should be, this is the way it shouldn't be. So I'm thinking about this. In spiritual life, you see this continuously. I'm looking in various spiritual organizations, various religions. There is an enormous percentage of time spent on judging and condemning others. You see it with anyone who's not in the same religion as you, obviously is less intelligent. Anyone who's a follower of this other person is obviously stupid. Or an ISKCON talk. This one can't control their senses. They are just some lusty pig. So we are going through life with this perception that there is this way. Fundamentalism is born with this mentality. There is this way. You follow like this, you do like this. This is the way. I was watching this TV show, The Mandalorian, you probably don't know about, but in their code, they always end up saying, "This is the way." And that makes me laugh so much. This is the way. As far as I've seen, there is no way. There's definitely a destination. And there are definitely good ideas and good techniques and good instructions on how to reach that destination. But it's not just a linear journey. It's not just a linear journey from here to there. If it was a linear journey, you can just throw everybody in a train and just send them on. It's a complex journey. Because each individual person is dealing with their choices and the consequences of their choices. And we're all different. We make different choices. And we have different reasons for making these choices. Sometimes we may agree with other people's choices. And sometimes for a short while, we may be in some kind of a compatible situation, traveling together on this path. But it never lasts because we are always making our own choices. Every parent learns this sooner or later. Their children make choices and they go their own way. You know, when you are a guru in some kind of movement, it's the same. You're like a parent and all these children are making their own choices. But each person is moving forward in their own way. Some people think success in spiritual life means you work under the whim of the power of guru. There's an authority and you follow it. I find that to be so counterproductive. And therefore, I like to present things to help, to assist, to facilitate. Take it or leave it, use it, don't use it, put it on a shelf, use it later, all up to you. And yet sometimes we have no choice but to be under the whim of, put a line, fill it in, whatever you think. In fact, one could make an argument that this is the nature of the living entity. That we always end up in the service of some powerful authority. And so again, to repeat what I said here, that even accepting that, we have the choice on how to respond to being in that service. So let's speak about what it is that we're after. I would suppose all of us could share that we're after that deep and eternal connection to Radha and Krishna. And more than anything else, we want that. We've spent a lot of time figuring out how to have that. Yet there are so many problems associated with just living that which we want becomes immersed often in some other mixture. So one of our disciplines is to constantly focus our attention back on Radha and Krishna. We know when we do that it's not going to last. We know that. The telephone's going to ring, somebody's going to call for us, somebody's going to need us, something's going to happen. We have to run to the bathroom. God knows what. We're going to lose that concentration. We have no choice with all these things because we live at the whim of. But when we say, no, I'm going to focus my attention on Radha Krishna, that's us taking control and saying everything else can wait. This is what I'm going to do right now. And we're going to choose. We're going to take control to some extent of that which is whimsically pushing us around and saying, no, I'm not going to bother. No, I don't choose that. Yes, I will do this. Yes, I must do that. Yes, I want to do this. And in this way, our life becomes a perfect compromise. A fundamentalist does not like compromise. But if you don't want to be under the whims of fundamentalism, then the only solution is to embrace compromise and turn it to your favor. One of the problems with talking about this stuff is that everybody is saying, we know all about it. We deal with it all the time. It's not even interesting. I mean, it's just life. But it is interesting because it's just life. And therefore, it's important to analyze it, to understand it, and to direct it, to modify it in your favor. And even if you have a weakness, even if there is a failure, to understand that, to embrace it, not try to push it away and ignore it, and modify it in your favor. And that's the art. That is the art of manipulating our way through this situation where we are a servant to so many whims. So our responsibility is to choose how we are going to maneuver our way through this complex situation of events and environments that we find ourselves in at every moment. I've taken it upon myself as one of my tasks to try to facilitate this consciousness and awareness of perception to understand the moment, what's happening right now. Where am I? Where do I want to go? What's around me? How shall I act? And I hope that I have, in some small way, assisted in that. So I'd like to take a little break, and if you want, you can ask some questions, or you can just march out and say, oh, how boring, this is ridiculous, it is your choice. And I'll be back in a few minutes. I'm back. Howdy. I'm really grateful to Jayanti for saying what she did because I was walking away thinking, oh God, that was the worst lecture in history. She said, a very inspiring lecture. Lesson and needed in these confusing times. I'm interested, when you give these lessons by inspiration, whether at the same time giving us explanations and visualizations, you yourself get answers and questions for yourself and your life. Are we, by listening to you, serving as an instrument of your inspiration? You just gave me the answers to the current life situation, and you started the lesson with the solar storms that I have been following intensely these past few days. I hope that we inspire you as much as you inspire us. Now that's, if I could say, this is like playing music. That went, for example, Shiva and I were playing music. We were totally in connection with the audience. So as the audience's consciousness would interact with us, we would transform accordingly. You know, that also brings up a point. Like, for example, some people who you speak, I don't want to say with because that contradicts what I'm going to say, some people who you speak in connection with don't understand that. They don't understand how their words are interacting with their audience. In fact, there was an article yesterday about a guy in Florida who in 1989 made lessons on how to use Microsoft Word. And this video has been viewed 3.1 million times with 11,000 comments. He is considered to be the most boring man on earth. And people use that video who have insomnia. They listen to him and they fall asleep. And the people who wrote the article asked him if he was aware of how famous he was. And he said, why would anybody want to learn something from 1989? I don't understand. He had no clue about interacting with the audience. He had no clue the effect he was having by speaking. So it seems to me that if anybody wants to be effective in anything they do, they have to have an interactive relationship with those who they do it with. Any sports game you play is totally dependent on the interaction between the athletes. They have to work together as one. This idea of the speaker and the listener is a very important relationship. If you all were not interested in what I'm talking about, I would have no capacity to speak. I mean, I don't want to freak you out, but I'm very aware when everybody starts drifting away. And then I get all freaked out. Oh God, I'm losing everybody. What do I do? How do I change it? What do I say? It's like they have this Zoom icon that everybody can put. Boring. I get it. I'm also listening to me. And sometimes I'm saying, boring. Hey, you know, you can't do everything perfect all the time. If at least most of the time you do it good enough, that's not bad. So that's, yep, that's what I wanted to say about that question. Number one, isn't the divine mercy unlimited and we always have a chance to be forgiven and accepted? And how to accept it without taking it for granted? That's a good point. It's a good excuse to think that we are unconditionally loved. Why care about our behavior and neglect the deities or people we love? Good question. Number one. Yeah, I mean, yes, that is like a super important point. When you are faced with unconditional love, we are now in the spotlight, because if we abuse that unconditional love, what does that make us? But then I might ask the question, are you sure we are all of us, everywhere, at all times, unconditionally loved in the same way? That sounds like an assumption. Something we would expect of God. Is it actually so? Is it actually so that Krishna loves the demon and devotee equally, unconditionally? And that unconditional love means you get the same benefits package. Because I think that's the real question. Is the benefits package the same for all? Well, I can't say for sure, but I don't think so. I think that that unconditional love really means that anytime you approach God, anytime you surrender to, are in devotion to, you wish to serve, Krishna accepts you. To expand that outside of that is risky because we really don't know for sure, do we? I don't know if I'm qualified to discuss that even. That kind of like places Krishna in the position of being a mindless robot who just loves everybody everywhere at all time, no matter what. Or this unlimited merciful being who's merciful no matter what you do. I don't think either of those things are realistic. But I do know that anyone at any time who approaches Krishna with some desire for that connection, in whatever way that might manifest, even a little bit, Krishna goes out of his way to make that connection. That little bit of desire is enough to start the process. So that means Krishna is always aware of where you are, whether you have zero desire, whether you have no interest, or whether you have even the slightest amount of interest. Which means Krishna is constantly aware of everybody at all time. But the benefits package is not equal to all. In other words, that unlimited love is a potential. And if you misuse it, if you take advantage of it, if you take it for granted, that puts you in a risky situation. Don't forget, that's why the Krishna left the gopis, because he suggested they took him for granted in the rasa dance. So these ideas about unlimited love and taking advantage all really point to our responsibility to understand how blessed we are and to never forget that. And at the same time, consider other people in the same way. Well, at least that's the best I can answer that question. Number two, question about scientists. Do they bring more harm or benefit to humanity? There it is. Well, scientists aren't one person. They're not one group. They are as diverse as there are scientists on the planet. That's like saying, question about football players. Do they bring benefit? So I can say with great certainty, some scientists create problems. Some scientists do good things. One could say, what about science? Does science in and of itself create harm or benefit? But science is just the art of figuring things out. And that very much depends on what you're figuring out and how you're figuring it out and for whose benefit you're figuring it out or to whose harm you're figuring it out. So all that blah, blah was just my way of saying, I don't know. How about that for a very scientific answer? Number three. Are these flares on the sun only a consequence of our disharmony in the human world? The sun is independent of our human world. But anyway, I heard that through the sun, the Lord sends his energy of universal love, which Bhumi receives, and due to that transformation of earthly energy occurs, including the imbalance of electricity, which should partially stop the madness that is happening in the... You can translate, Maharaj. Well, okay, let's say like this. The sun as a planet, as a star, rather, is performing an essential function. However, it exists independently of us as human race existence. But the Earth and every single planet in our solar system is absolutely dependent on the sun. And because of that, there is that relationship of dependency. We could not exist without the sun, but the sun could exist without us. So it's not a mutual dependency. It's very much a one-way dependency. And that's a very important point in regard to this question. Now, does the sun send the universal love of God? Well, maybe that's a good image. Maybe that's a good metaphor. Especially since it's described... Why am I muted? What the hell? Hello, why did I get muted? Okay, what was the last thing you heard me say? Yes, it's a metaphor. Because the sun is also considered to be the eye of the Lord. And it's very much related to light and that energy of projecting light. But as far as projecting the unlimited love of the Lord, I'm not sure about that. I think it's, in this sense, it's more of a metaphor. Or, yes, the sun is the vehicle by which the unlimited love of the Lord goes to Goddess Bhumi. And that's fine. Okay, let's look at number four. Number five. We did number four. Do we as souls fulfill the desires of the needs of the body more than the needs of our soul? Sometimes it is not clear to distinguish between these needs. What? You rephrase the question, Maha, in a way that I can understand it better. How to distinguish the needs between the body and the soul? On one hand, that's obvious. On the other hand, it's impossible. When you say the needs of the soul doesn't have needs. The body has needs. The soul is. And complete in and of itself. So the only way to understand this question is to rephrase it by saying, my desire to be spiritual is often in conflict with the bodily requirements. Or even more radical, my desire to be spiritual is often hijacked by the desires of my body. So my desire to be spiritual is run by various rules that my body doesn't want to follow sometimes. That's not really a need of the soul. That's actually a need of regulation of the body to make our pathway to spirituality easier, maybe. Now, you may be asking another way to look at this, that our body is very demanding all the time. Our body is filled with demands. What it wants, when it wants, how it wants. And so this seems to take up most of our time, if you think about it, as far as the quantity of time. Most of the time we're busy figuring things out with the body, and a little bit of the time, relatively speaking, you know, when you consider sleeping too, the little bit of the time is meant for the spiritual activities. Now, the question may be, is there a problem with that? Now, I feel badly here because I'm kind of rephrasing your question in a variety of ways, and you may not like that at all. And to that I answer, write better questions. Then I won't have to spend so much time interpreting them. Okay, let's move on to number 6. Is there life in the sun? Woo! That's a hot question. On the sun that we see, if so, how does it look like? And is it even possible to imagine it? And the next question is about Surya, the sun god. These are good questions, and of course they're very interesting. But, I mean, do I have experience of life on the sun? So do you want me to say, yes, in this literature it says there is the life on the sun, because there's life on all the planets. And there are little plasma worms, or big plasma worms, that are all running around on the sun. There was a whole pile of them, and they have very hot conversations. Is it possible for us to imagine it? Nope. And what's interesting about the devas is that their forms, when we're talking about these various devas, are they of the material that they control, or are they independently existing, embodied from the material that they control, or is it a combination of the two? The fundamental devas have a unique capacity to perform their services by having full and total conscious control over those elements related to their position. Yet at the same time, they work within a framework of creation that together with all the others doing the same thing brings about the environment that must be there at this particular moment in time. They communicate together, they share together, they, when they so desire, may assume forms by which they can do that efficiently. They are not limited like we are. For them, it's not either or. For them, it's very much an and situation. They can do both those things. So that's my 2 cents on that. But what is the coin used to be in the old days? It had some value. What is it called? A what? Kopecks. Yes, there we go. I was going to say that's my 2 kopecks. But I forgot. It's been so long. Okay. Do they still use kopecks? Nah. Yeah, okay. Can you buy anything with 50 kopecks? Oh, that's so funny. Okay. Can you please give a definition of spiritual activity? Ooh, that's a big question. Well, there are so many levels of that. For example, spiritual activity as in that which goes on in spiritual planets, in spiritual forms, with pastimes of Krishna. That's what we would call the primary spiritual activity. But we're not in that situation. So for us, spiritual activity very much refers to either our realization of acting on that platform, or our being told something we can do should be on that platform or is on that platform. Or to be even more radical, everything we do is a spiritual activity, because it is the spirit which initiates these things. But then again, you run into all kinds of problems, like something which is very much material in the sense that it doesn't have a relationship, direct relationship to spirit, like I'm lifting my glasses. This is like really purely a material act, isn't it? But if this is a merely material act, what caused those glasses to lift in the air? Do bodies just act? Sometimes, yeah, sure. Like heart beating, blood pumping, digestion happening. Yes. But I could just sit here just as well and all those things would happen automatically and my glasses still would not be lifted up. Can you imagine if my body just gave lectures? Interesting. No, me, the spiritual consciousness, the spiritual being, directs, I'm going to do this. So ultimately, it's a spiritual activity. The spirit directs emotion and action. Then you get into the trouble of, well, then what's the nature of spiritual development? So then we can throw in the idea, well, if the spiritual activity we initiate is beneficial for our spiritual activity, or it's devotional, or it is somehow connected with God, or it's in service, then it's a spiritual activity. So then we could say, a spiritual activity is one in which the higher realm of spirit, meaning the devotional and the consciousness of spirit, is active, whereas any other motion is the spirit initiating. So there's the spiritual, and then there's the spirit, which is the fuel or energy behind any activity. So when we separate the word spiritual from spirit in this specific manner, it makes it easier to talk about it. And Todi, thank you very much for your appreciation. And I wish you all well. Have a good day and don't get blasted by the solar rays. Don't get, roasted. Bye-bye, everyone.